listener production.
Welcome to the Adam and Simon Show, showies. It's Thursday, and Simon, he's still late. He's still late, and he's still not here. So we have another best of for you before we are back next week. We are back. We promise next week there'll be a fresh new episode where Simon and I can tell you about our European travels. He can beg for your forgiveness because right now we have a best of episode with Client Liaison, one of the best live acts in Australian music, in world music, I'd even say. They're sick. They're awesome. And they're super interesting. So we've got a great chat with them way back from the archives that we hope you enjoy. And Simon promises me he will be back. Like, I don't know how many more times I can say he'll be back. The boys are back. He's going to have to make some video that involves the word back because he's certainly not front. So here we go. Enjoy the chat with Client Liaison. And we promise from the bottom of our hearts that we will be back on Tuesday with all new Adam and Simon Show. For now, enjoy the chat. See you, shall we? We always have massive guests on this show, but we've got one that we are particularly super pumped for. We've got Monty from Client Liaison. Monty, welcome to the show, mate.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Now, Monty, we've got to start off with a thank you, a couple of thank yous first. So the first thank you comes from me. I don't know if you remember. I mean, you definitely don't. There was you performed at the Forum in Melbourne, and the after party was at a nightclub called Unz Unz. And it was at that nightclub that I met my now wife for the second time that we'd ever met. I had a couple too many red wines, so I passed out in the Uber on the way to the after party. But then because your after party was there, I was able to have that as an excuse to meet her for the second time. So thank you very much from me personally.
Wow, a pleasure. That's incredible. I loved Unz Unz. There was so many good times had at Unz Unz. What a nightclub.
What a name. What does it do there? Oh, you know, Unz Unz, you know, it just goes for it. And then my thank you is from both of Adam and I. We actually went to a Client Liaison gig at the end of last year. It was supposed to be, I think, a little bit of like a ode to the relaunch. Like, you know, COVID days were past us. It was at the Tote Hotel in Melbourne, and a bit of foreshadowing just as you moved into like playing the newer songs, the ones from the album coming out now, the power went out for the whole building.
Yeah, so that's right.
So then you – and look, it's one of my girlfriend's favorite stories actually. She loves telling people that then when the power went out, you guys just went backstage, got champagne and oysters for everybody, and then gave them to the crowd.
Yes, that's right, yeah. Bit of a consolation.
Is that a regular occurrence?
Well, we do. Yeah, we do like giving things to the crowd, you know, interacting with them, champagne, Fosters, oysters. But, yeah, it was a sorry consolation for the power going out. I think the saxophone was still wailing.
Yes.
We didn't even realise. We were the last to realise in the room.
What else? Because, like, because you brought out the oysters and the champagne, what else is in the Client Liaison rider? Like, what else do you ask for at stuff? And have you ever gone absolutely wild and just asked for something completely outrageous?
Oh, there's a lot of boring items like batteries and tape. And, there's a lot of things we have to do during sound check and to get it right. But you know, we do like some novelty items. We used to have Le Snacks on the rider,
oh, really?
So we had boxes and boxes in our studio. We now have Yogos.
That's a nice. Yeah, that's a real throwback.
Yeah, our guitarist Geordie, he likes a Yogo, although he never says he'll have one during the sound check, but then after the show he just smashes two. Two Yogos on ice.
Yeah. Everyone else is rehydrating or getting in the beers. He's like, nah, I want some nice chocolate yogurt milk-based substance. This would be good.
Yes, this would
be good. All right, that is so good. Hey, mate, Client Liaison are known for a lot of things, one of them being the music, obviously. The other is about the fashion. And I'm all about it. I think to the gig that we saw, you had like this sick wide-brimmed hat on. It was great. Has there ever been anything that you have put on and you're like, this is actually too outrageous even for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens when, you know, we go through things. Sometimes things don't work.
Yep.
But then often the most outrageous things we start to love.
I like that.
It's like fashion, yeah, you've got to make yourself uncomfortable to keep progressing. So it's like shoes. You know, most people like their style of shoes and they really associate with them and they identify with that kind of shoe. It represents them. You know, they have maybe two or three kinds of shoes. But you'll find if you step far, far outside of your comfort zone, you'll actually find that those new, really ugly, weird shoes will be your new favorite shoes.
Man, this is a beautiful metaphor for life. That's wonderful. Why do you think it, like, why do you reckon it's shoes that are people's things? Like, why is it not shorts? Why do people, like, relate to and find themselves so much in shoes?
Well, shoes are very representative of where you come from. You know, there's a lot of baggage in shoes. Are they dirty? Are they clean? They tell you what class you're from, what you're into. And, you know, we change shirts every day. We generally wear shoes for a long time. So, yeah.
Do you feel like there's a lot of stereotypes associated with shoes as well? I reckon there would be. I think that's a bloody genius call.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Like someone,
you know, I mean, like I'm from the pre like normcore era, the kind of hipster era where, you know, people would wear nice shoes. And then runners, you know, trainers became just all popular and everyone wore trainers, you know. That happened quite a few years ago now and I really struggled with that because, like, I like dressing up and I like wearing nice shoes and appreciate dancing shoes, leather soles and things like that. So it was a big stretch for me to go to trainers, but I haven't looked back.
See, uncomfortable. You were uncomfortable for a little while and now you're into it. I like that.
Yeah, it's like Prince, he always wore high heels. He had his custom shoes, but eventually he stuffed his hip up and so he got high-heeled thongs.
Of course. Of course he did.
Lovely. What's your current favorite pair of shoes that you've got in the closet?
They're called Lusso. They're very soft, very relaxing. Yeah, they're just kind of ridiculous moon boot looking things.
Yeah.
And they're beyond comfortable and I love them and I love how absurd they look.
I would say that they are like, to describe it for everyone, they are like an incredibly, and this is going to be a terrible comparison, like an incredibly fashionable version of a Skecher. You know, like the Skechers?
Oh, yeah.
But just like a super, super nice version of that. Do you find that people send you lots of clothes because you were known for your clothes and you're like, man, I've got heaps of clothes already?
Yeah, it happens a bit. I mean, sometimes they're genuine fans and it's very nice. And sometimes you just get sent a whole lot of junk. But even that stuff, it goes into the wardrobe and sometimes it turns into something else. Yeah, I mean, I've just collected clothes my whole life. So everywhere I go, I collect clothes and we have a big wardrobe.
Because you went to Geelong Grammar.
Yeah.
Obviously, heavily uniform based. How were you like expressing your fashion choices at Geelong Grammar when you're young? Or is this something that you've grown into after school? You've gone the complete opposite. You're like, no more uniforms. I'm going heavy into this. This is my new life.
Well, everyone at school, you know, usually people like to break the rules with their school wardrobe. You know, they untuck the shirt, they've got ripped pants, the pants are like falling down or it's the belt. And I did the opposite. I was like, well, I'm going to wear this right. I'm going to look smart.
That. Yes.
Love tuck that. It in, get the tie up, fresh, make it, you know. I mean, I did struggle because I had long hair and they'd often try to make me cut it.
Right.
Yeah, that was one thing I struggled with, but I got the priest on side, the school chaplain.
That's going to be a win.
And he said, oh, such luscious locks. And, so I was allowed to keep my hair.
How did that discussion go down? Look, Jesus, he had long hair. I'm just like Jesus.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's a nice angle.
What's because the hair is beautiful, it's luscious, it's fantastic. What's the care that you have to put into it at the moment? Like, do you have like a regime that you run through? Because Simon always has quite difficulty with how much to do and how often to do and what products to buy. Like, do you have any guidance for him?
Have you heard of the movement, shampoo is a conspiracy?
Whoa.
I like it.
Whoa. Yeah, I mean, I've heard of it, but doesn't your hair get really oily or no?
Well, you still use conditioner, and I use mask as well, mask and conditioner. But you don't want to strip your hair of all that oil, and it takes a while for the oil to come through naturally and to regulate itself. So it can take, you know, take a while. And look, maybe it's not for everyone, but it works well for me.
So are you saying that, like, you need to put up with that patch in your life where your hair's too oily and then it will naturally filter out and then you're good, then you're back?
Yeah, I can't even remember that patch.
Mate, look at this. Far out, this is – I bet you didn't think you'd be talking about this today.
That almost plays again into the uncomfortableness. Like, you just have to live with oily hair and be a little bit uncomfortable and then, bang, you're comfortable again. You found your new zen, like you found your new space. That's, mate, this is just it seems like a thread that runs through the life.
I think when I was 17, I made some conscious decisions. I decided I was no longer going to be embarrassed by my parents.
Love that.
Even though they're pretty embarrassing. They're pretty crazy. You know, I love them, but they're pretty crazy. So I decided to not be embarrassed by my parents because that's just going to hold me back because I'm not them. And the only way I can distinguish myself from them is I'm not responsible for them. The second thing was to always do the dishes whenever at anyone's house because, you know, you're young and you don't know how to help, so you just jump up and you do the dishes. And then the third thing was to try any food I don't like until I like it.
Until you like it. So it's not just try and then accept that you don't like it and be like, okay, you just keep pushing it in the mouth.
Yeah, because, you know, you just every opportunity, you just give it another shot. And eventually you love it
all.
And like a lot of life is like that. You know, if you can open your mind, you can continue learning. You know, people have closed minds about so many things. Like I hate when people say that they like a certain kind of wine. It's like, what? Wine is, there's so many varieties of wine. Like there's so many out there. Like keep trying because you'll never end the exploration of trying.
Which foods did you try at the start that you were like, I'm going to have to push through and like this one? Like, which were the ones that gave you the greatest challenge? Who put up the biggest fight?
Surprisingly, this is a very client liaison food. It was oysters.
Whoa.
I love seafood. I love the flavor, but the texture of a raw oyster slipping down the throat was really difficult for me, and it took a long time, actually a long time. Now I enjoy them, and I actually really like cooked oysters and soups as well. I think they're not done enough. Cooked oysters are fantastic. But, yeah, oysters, they took
love
a while.
That's brilliant.
Very interesting. This is so, look, we probably should bring it back to the band at some point.
Let's go. We'll talk a little bit about the band and then because we've got to talk about – so the new album's called Divine Intervention. Everyone should go and listen. We've, as we said, the Tote gig was just a little preview to it and it was awesome. So go and listen to it because it's going to be absolutely everywhere. But also you guys are selling part of your souls. Well, you're selling your souls as an NFT, a non-fungible token. And I've just got into the NFT game. I just sold my first penguin last night. I bought a penguin the other day and I've resold it off and I'm flipping in and out. But should I be buying some of your soul as a non-fungible token so then I can own a part of you and Harvey?
Most definitely, if you can, because I think most of the souls have been sold. I think there's a few portions left. The main auction is over, but the great thing about NFTs is, you know, you can always try and, you know, resell them and buy them off other people, and we make a cut every time. So,
sell, guys, buy and sell as much as you can.
Do.
What was the idea behind the NFT? Is it just like a comment on, you know, NFTs are booming, so let's get involved, or is I don't know, just a nice little marketing spin.
Yeah, I mean, we can't play shows right now. And so, you know, how can we interact with our fans? And so it's like, okay, let's give them a piece of us, you know.
Yeah, literally.
Client liaison is, you know, it belongs to the fans, so let's give them a piece of our soul. Because we were discussing doing an NFT drop, but we like how a soul is intangible and an NFT is intangible. So there's kind of like a layer there of like, what the hell am I buying? I'm not actually sure. So, and it relates to the concept of the album. So Yeah, you know, we have many crazy ideas, and not all of them come to fruition. But for some reason, this made sense.
Yeah. Have you had anyone who's bought a part of your soul say that they've done anything with it? Like someone's like, oh, I had dinner with your soul the other night. Thanks for coming to dinner, or something like that.
Oh, the nice thing was seeing the backlash from religious folks. That was quite interesting.
It's lucky that you've made friends with the priest back at school.
Yeah. Like, you're going to hell. You can't sell your soul. Like, you know, you shouldn't be doing this. You're already going. That album of yours is like, you know. And then we started tweeting at like Hillsong, because, you know, they take up such a huge portion of the Australian music landscape, of the music market. We're like, come on, Hillsong, buy a piece of us. Scott Morrison, get in, you know. You need a piece of our soul. So, yeah, it's been a bit of fun.
Because, like, in your defense, you're not selling it to the devil. Like, you're just selling it to people.
Yeah, I mean,
that's it. Yeah.
The devil has equal opportunity to buy some of the soul as everybody else. If anything, you are equal opportunity sellers.
Yes, that's right.
But, like, the devil, very old too. So, like, not really. The NFT is not specifically a boomer game either. So they're probably not quite across the NFT game. So you might catch him on the age thing there, which would be, you know, that's pretty good. Hey,
Well, they'll outlast us. Yeah. So our soul will live on until it's
And you'll be keep getting a cut. This is like, you're just making this old money now. You're like, here you go, kids. Here is the token for my wallet, and you'll get a cut from this. My soul keeps getting sold. Hold on. Hold on.
That's it, yeah.
So the new album comes out, well, it's out now. What is a question? So if anyone has never heard of Client Liaison, is there a song on this album that you guys are like, this is us, this is the most us? Or do you recommend the whole album as a collective? What's the best way to listen to it?
Oh, I like listening to albums as a one-shop stop. I'm really into that, and we took a long time to track list it right and hit all the different moods and the different styles of Client Liaison. But, I mean, I was speaking to a 19-year-old the other day, and I said, have you listened to the album, like the whole album? He goes, yeah, I did it. You know, most people, they don't take the time, you know, they don't actually, you know, there's been so much care into the order it's gone in and how it's presented. You know, I just opened that up and hit shuffle straight away. And I was like, what? Shuffle? That doesn't make any sense. And then I realized, oh, maybe it does, because you come to it in a different way every time. And you never get bored at the start, and you never get, you know, sometimes you never get to the end of an album. You're always distracted, especially now. So it's like, you know, everyone listens to music in different ways. But I like the album. I mean, I would say that I think the most universal song is The Real Thing, because it's about self-belief and picking yourself up. And that song was like written as a multi-generational thing, you know. It's written for children, it's written for 60-year-olds and everyone in between. So, yeah, that would be the first one I'd play.
I actually thought you were going to say when the 19-year-old said hit shuffle, and I was like, well, maybe a part of my soul just died, but turns out part of your soul can't die because someone owns that for you.
Yeah, there you go, yeah.
When you write a song, because we are not musically talented at all. The most musically talented I am is my girlfriend is a singing teacher. She can sing. She can sing really quite well. When you're writing a song and writing an album, are there times where you finish a song and you're like, that's a banger. That is a full-on banger. Like, we've nailed this one. This is – everyone's going to love this. You can tell straight away.
Yeah. Yeah, I cry when I write something really good. Yeah. I mean, there's like our we're writing pop music, so there's detail everywhere, and every single line is combed over, every single production, mix, vocal take. So, you know, there's a lot of time put into getting it right, but often the fruition, the very genesis of a song can often happen in about 3 or 4 hours.
When you're writing the lyrics and things, is your phone just like loaded with lots of lyrics in your notes, or is there like, how do you go about writing them down? Do you do the standard like, all right, I'm going to work 9 to 5 on a song, or wait for that moment of inspiration and then just like pop it in the phone? Or
I've got lots and lots of documents on my computer from years of lyric writing, and I try to keep a practice up of writing, but My latest technique is to get off the screen, so I'm doing just books. So I'm just always writing down ideas, listening out for things, and then I take a book and then rewrite it into another book and then rewrite it into another book, because it's about constantly editing, and because you have to sway from the creative mind, which just lets loose and has no judgment, and then the critical mind, which is finding the right things and then pushing yourself back into the creative mind again. So it's nice to have like a step-by-step process. You know, with songwriting, it's like, let's just get a beat, get yourself lost in the beat until you like love it, and then move on to the next step, you know.
Has that experience changed for you as you live through it, like changing from the screen to the books?
Well, I haven't actually written, I haven't finished any songs in this format. So,
the album just came out, mate. Give me a break. Like,
yeah, I'm pretty slow at writing songs, really. Like, and I love using collaborators to get me across the line, because otherwise I'll just keep writing books and books and stuff. Or I'll have lots of ideas, but none of them will get finished. So, yeah, we're yet to see.
And what about, so when you perform a gig, like Client Liaison Gig, for anyone who hasn't been, we highly recommend they go. They are super high energy, some of the most fun out there. Are you just completely cooked afterwards and need to have like a full 12-hour sleep? Because you guys are running around stage, there's like lights on, everyone's sweating, everyone in the crowd's dancing. Like, mate, I'm tired enough after the end of the hour set. You guys must be absolutely spent.
Oh, kind of the opposite, because there's so much adrenaline and energy. You know, you want that right amount of adrenaline. Sometimes you don't care enough for whatever reason, or sometimes you care too much and then you're nervous. But if you've got the right amount, you kind of, I actually struggle sleeping, so I much prefer going to an after party and DJing,
right,
and keeping it going. You know, I'll be the last one dancing, really.
Is that the plan for this album, when we're allowed to? You'll kind of tour it, and then is the side project DJ John Howard still up and running, still tracking along?
It still exists, but yeah, the plan is to tour next year. So it's quite difficult to plan indoor shows right now with COVID. So there's a lot of festivals on the horizon, which is nice. And then yeah, later next year, do our own tour, which is nice because people would have had a chance to listen to the album by then.
Yep.
And you know, we're really proud of it. Like, it's 4 years' work, and we're like, we want to play all the songs off the new album. It's rare to have so much new material to show people.
And I'd imagine it would be hard playing those gigs too, because, you know, people want the old stuff. Play the old stuff. And you're like, oh, mate, I'm telling you, this new stuff is so good. I've worked really hard about play the old stuff though. Does that, like, how do
yeah,
you
Yeah, I mean, we've always, from the word go, we've played unreleased music in our live sets. So people would come to our show multiple times. I remember people getting angry. I'm sick of it. I have to come to listen to this. Just release it. Just release it. So, yeah, so like some of these songs we were playing live and people were over the moon to finally hear them. So it's kind of, and, you know, we're not that band that had that massive hit. It's just one song after the other, you know, and each one does well and some do better than others, and you know, the audience slowly grows. So we haven't been cursed with that, like, I just want the hit at the end. Give me
yeah,
the hit.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we like to find out from our interviewees on the show, Monty, about things that they do that are outside the scope of what they're known for. So obviously yours is music. But Simon has stumbled upon, because we know you're a big fan of snow sports, but Simon has stumbled upon a 2017 video on YouTube of you presenting the Snow Report. Is there, are you thinking of getting into the Snow Report game, or is it more just for skiing and snowboarding that's your aim?
I can't even remember doing that Snow Report, but I would say Harvey is great. He could be an incredible TV presenter. And I think we could work as a duo.
I like that.
Yeah, he's very good off the cuff. So, yeah, we could definitely do that. Look, we like snow sports, like, run in our blood. We grew up skiing together, and we go to Mount Buller in Victoria. So it's pretty nice. We know a lot of the people on the mountain. It's as much the skiing as it is the extracurricular
activities. And Buller, you said that's where you kind of used to go. Where's the best mountain, in your opinion?
In Australia?
Oh, nah, world. We'll go the world. We'll go the world.
My favourite is Val d'Isère in France. Just it's just so massive, just so big. My favorite thing about skiing is exploring, going into remote valleys and looking around and not seeing anyone, and also the lunch halfway. You get to the bottom of the valley and then you have lunch in this tiny hut, and Europe is incredible for that. But I've skied in like India, and you can do the same thing there. You can go and ski in the Himalayas in remote valleys, and then you have a curry, you know, on a plastic chair for lunch, and it's like it's heaven for me. Yeah.
That's a really nice payoff. Do you get as excited about watching snow sports? Obviously, the Winter Olympics is coming up next year. Do you get jazzed up for them, or is it more just I need to have my feet in the powder?
Yeah, I enjoy them, but I would prefer watching snow sports while having lunch. While skiing, you know, like that's the tradition in Europe. Like, you know, they all watch the race after a big, you know, dumpling soup or something. The race is on the TV and everyone's watching, going, yeah, drinking beers. Like, that's. Yeah.
Are you a skier or snowboarder?
I'm a skier and Harvey's a snowboarder. Yeah.
Ah, okay. Is that the only reason you can be friends? If you both skied, it'd be too competitive. Both snowboard the same.
Yeah, I mean they're not that compatible, skiing and snowboarding. So,
because you would have to do different runs and stuff, right? Well, like different backcountry stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you're always waiting for the snowboarder. I'm sorry to say. They just take longer. They got to buckle. They can't get from A to B. Like, there's you know, some places where a snowboard is better, like cutting through deep powder, but you can get thick skis for that. So, It's kind of funny because it's like Harvey and myself are quite different. We're very similar, but we're also quite different. And we often want to go separate ways, but we need to go the same way to keep going as a band. So
I love it. Just
it's indicative of us.
The metaphors for your life are just threaded throughout. I'm really about it. Is it true? You'll definitely have a biased opinion, but I'll ask it anyway. Is it true that skiing is easier to learn, harder to master? Snowboarding, harder to learn, easier to master. No, yep, I said it right, yep.
Yes, yeah, snowboarding, you're on your bum at the start.
But once you get going, you're going and it's fine. It's like no worries.
Yeah, but then you can get going, you know. You can kind of get down fairly easily. But I would say, when people say, oh, what should I do? I say, do you want to be 60 on your ass? For me, skiing is for life, you know. And you don't want to be snowboarding when you're old. You don't want to be constantly with your wet bum and your wet gloves, having to lift yourself up. Or you can age gracefully as a skier. So it's a sport for you.
Have you ever done like summer skiing, you know, like the on the grass and that kind of thing? Or does it have to be the powder?
Never done grass skiing, no. I don't know if it's that popular.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I mean, it actually sounds shithouse when you talk about it. Like when you say, oh, do you want to ski down a grass hill? You're like, not really, mate.
What about heli skiing? Have you done heli skiing?
No, I haven't done it in a helicopter. I've done like the highest mountain in the Himalayas. I've done lots of backcountry skiing. Off-piste skiing, but not in a helicopter. No, I'd love to do that.
That's bloody very impressive, mate. Very, very impressive. Hey, we've got a bunch of questions right at the end that we'd like to hit people with. We don't have a name. We're kind of new to doing this in a somewhat professional capacity. Usually it's a bit of a shit show, as you can probably see. and so we've got a few just like almost quick response questions. Is there anything left on your bucket list?
Heli skiing.
Brilliant. Brilliant answer. Great answer. Yep.
Very good. And then favorite snack or recess, like favorite recess or lunch meal when you're at school, obviously talking to the priest.
Oh, okay. Well, it was boarding school, so it was all about schnitzels with like the highlight.
Hey, there you go. Nice. So at boarding school, it's like full meals all the time. You don't just
hot meals. Yep. Not that great, but you know that you're growing and you're hungry, so yeah.
It's better than a salad sandwich from my dad, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, well, actually, Simon, my mother used to give me a tin of pineapple every day. That was a big part of that. Yeah.
I assume a ring pulled tin and not like one that you had to bring a can opener with.
No. Yeah, the ring, little tiny ring pull one. Yeah.
Bang. Finish the fruit, bit of juice to finish off at the end. That's a real treat. That's a 1-2 punch. Well done, mum.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah.
Hey, my last question before our last question. What's next now that the album's out? You've got some free time. What are you guys up to next? What happens now?
Lots of touring, brand collaborations, merchandise, more videos, but also just getting back in the studio.
Love it.
Love that. And our last question comes from Cassie. We get Cassie to ask a question to every guest, or we're stuck. This is our very first time that Cassie's asked a question to the guest, but she finishes us off. So, Cass, would you like to ask the question?
Yeah, g'day, client liaison. My question is, you did a fashion line years ago that was super successful. Are you going to do another fashion line?
Yeah, we like to dip our toes in and out of fashion, and we didn't have time recently because we're finishing an album, so it's definitely on the cards now. And it's nice that we're not dictated by seasons and we have to do it every year. So this year, next year is, let's get back into it. Let's do it.
I love it. Just awesome. Get a little bit tired of writing music. You're like, I'll just make something else. Keep the creative going and go from there.
That's it. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. That's really
love
cool.
Love that. Well, Monty, thanks very much for joining us, mate. For everyone out there listening, like we said a few times, the new album, Divine Intervention, go and check it out. If you're lucky, you can get a little bit of Monty and Harvey's soul that's still out there. Get out and see a gig. Get out and see one of them when they're on tour, because it is some of the best fun you'll have. So thanks very much for joining us, mate.
Thanks for having me, guys. See you later.